Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cinema Sommelier, where we taste test your favorite movies. I am Gary T. Moore.
And I am Zachary Wasileski. And today we're going to talk to you about Edgar Wright's 2017 movie, Baby Driver. All right, Baby Driver. So I've already said 2017 movie with Edgar Wright directing. This was a fantastic movie about basically pairing music to a heist movie. It's a one last heist type of movie, that typical movie that you'd see. It starts off with Baby, Ansel Elgort, who is just sitting in a car with a bunch of other heisters, his crew. And the first whole saga is just him, while they're robbing a bank, he's just the getaway driver. And that's basically the rest of the movie as well. He's always listening to music, and he is the getaway driver for this crew that is put together by Doc. Yeah, is there anything else that I need to go into, Gary?
No, I think that's it. I rewatched this last night, and I was like, good God, this movie is incredible. It's a 2-hour just nonstop adventure ride through the streets of Atlanta, and I was a big fan of that. At the time this came out, I was working in Buford, Georgia, and they say Buford Highway, which I worked right off of, and I'm like, I'm famous, guys. I'm famous. Stop the tape. I was like in the theater, like, I work there. I work right there. This is when you could go to movies, like every day, if you wanted to. Back before the pandemic.
Yeah, no, the whole movie takes place in Atlanta. I mean, the cast is also phenomenal. Oh, like a bunch of just super exciting people to watch on screen. Ansel Elgort, I said, Doc is played by Kevin Spacey, which depending on if you're still okay with Kevin Spacey, but it's got Lily James as a love interest. John Hamm is one of the crew. Jamie Foxx is one of the crew, a bunch of other people as well that sort of make appearances. It is just a thrilling ride, the entire movie.
I'm going to be speaking about Kevin Spacey as if I didn't know anything went wrong with his career.
Absolutely. This is, I think, his last movie prior to all of the events that occurred afterwards. And as an actor, Kevin Spacey is phenomenal. As a person, can't condone.
We'll put an asterisk beside the name Kevin Spacey to anyone listening to this, that yes, we fully acknowledge that what he did is unacceptable, completely unacceptable. But we're looking at this from a cinema and a film point of view. So, good God, Kevin Spacey was fantastic.
Yeah. And Edgar Wright, actually, with Jamie Foxx and Kevin Spacey in the movie, when they're in the same shot, he would always like say as he was recording it, like, this is our Oscar shot, our double Oscar shot.
It's
It is just fantastic. The cast is just so charismatic and so enthralling throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, they really are. They each, like, everyone brings something extremely different to the table. No one is like, oh, that's, they're just the same person. Except for if you look at John Hamm and his love interest, whose name is escaping me right now, they're the same person, if you will, just because they're meant to be, like, inseparable, you know?
Yeah. Which Monica is what I remember her actual name Monica. As. I don't remember what her actual, like, code name.
It's something that sounds like Monica. I cannot remember it right now.
Darling.
That's right. Because she's like, you think my real name's Darling? they're meant to be inseparable, and you really feel that because every single shot they're like in each other's laps, right?
Yeah, they're basically making out the entire movie.
They really are, which, you know, is sexy because they're both very attractive people.
And this is like John Hamm playing his Mad Men role. Like, it is just continuing that whole thing. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Like if Mad Men took place in like the early 2000s with the hair and the grunge and the, you know, a little more than a 8 o'clock shadow, if you will.
Yep.
But yeah, the cast is just in Flea, I believe, from Red Hot Chili Peppers is in it. It's just, yeah, it's the use of the cast. Now, you can always have good casting in a movie, right? Because it's like, you can have all these big names, but you can make a garbage product. I've seen it 1,000 times. I'm sure you have, and everybody, yep, or millions and millions of fans right now have done the same. But this cast utilizes the talent, and it uses them in such a way where it's like, okay, this is fantastic. It's so well done.
Can we talk about the first sequence? Like that whole, the initial bank heist, it is setting the tone for the movie. And the whole thing, like he, baby sitting in the front seat, Ansel Elgort again, sitting in the front seat. He's got glasses on, headphones in, music starts. People leave, they put on their masks, they go into the bank, and it just focuses on you. Like, it focuses on Ansel Elgort in the front seat. It doesn't focus on the bank heist. And then he's just sitting there singing. Like, the whole thing, he's just, like, jamming out to rock music. He turns the windshield wipers on. He's, like, right, bouncing right, back right, and forth. Yeah. And then, obviously, they come back. And my favorite part is the guy in the front seat points forward to go. And he had already had it in reverse and just takes off.
Shoots backwards.
And just, like, peels out. It gets into like this cop chase sequence. He does this whole like shell game underneath a bridge to avoid some helicopters.
Oh my god, that was so impressive.
Yeah, it is just, and all of this impressively is timed to the music. Like on cue, everything that happens is always on beat. And that happens the entire movie.
I said while watching it, it's like watching a 2-hour-long music video. With different songs. So let's say it is a musical, right? Because everything and instead of, you know, can-can dancers, you have cars and shootings and bank robberies and violence. And it's just so well done. And yes, everything is to the beat. The gunshots are down to the beat. And I'm just like, good God, this is impressive. Like, did they just shoot a lot and they cut it precisely to where it goes with the music? Or did they have, like, the music playing while they were filming and they did it that way? Or they're like, John Hamm, listen to this. Like, I don't know how they did that. And it's fantastic. It was so well done.
It's got to be some parts editing in post, some parts just, like, sound mixing with the editing, but also just the choreography. Like, this is such a well-planned-out movie.
It really is.
Like, the shot, the videography, cinematography, everything is planned out so specifically. If we sort of take the step into the next thing where baby's going on his coffee run. He basically acts as the intern. His coffee run is also just so well put together. So it's like, cool, scene one, nothing's going to beat it. And then you see scene two, and it's like, okay, this is all one continuous shot. You've got the music playing as he's walking down the street. There's like graffiti or a sticker or like something on the walls that will say the lyrics of the song as he's passing it. So it really does feel like a music video.
It gives you
all shot in one take.
Yeah, it gave me Spider-Verse vibes. Right? Yeah. Like at the beginning of Spider-Verse, you see like the words to the song or whatever, but these words are written in graffiti and on stickers. And he does like a trumpet or saxophone breakdown in front of like the brass store.
Yep.
Right? And I'm just like, my God, this is, oh, it was just, yes, it was very well shot. I did not know literally until just now that it was done in one shot, which is even more impressive because if you try to do anything in one shot, it's not easy, right? And especially to time music and to time dancing and to time extras and to time cars and everything else that he had to deal with. It's just incredible.
Yeah. I read somewhere that it took like 28 takes to do that first one shot, like coffee run scene. And they ended up taking like the 21st take. So like, it shows just how difficult it is to do something along those lines. Like everybody has to have a step exactly where it needs to be. And you do that. Like the thing that makes me laugh is at the end of it, as he's walking into the building to bring the coffee in, the last thing is there's graffiti on the side that's like, one more time is what it says on the side. And I'm just like, that must just be, you finish the run, we got to do this one more time. Let's go line it back up and just like, let's reshoot this exact shot. And I'm like, that must have just been their motto for that scene. It's like, let's do it one more time, see what we can
do. But it also sets, I honestly didn't notice that, but it sets it up for the entire movie, right? Because this whole movie, spoiler alert, should we do that? Have we done that? Have we said spoiler alert
yet? We haven't. Spoiler alerts.
Spoiler alert. This whole movie, you know, at first revolves around him doing this one last time, right? Like this is the last run. His debt is paid, which you find out later. His debt is paid. He no longer has to do these dangerous runs, and it's done one last time. So I think that's just a beautiful little like Easter egg that kicks off the rest of the movie. Like, you've seen the cool car stuff, you've seen the music video, and now, boom, one last time is the transition you need for the coffee and all that kind of stuff, which is where you get to know the rest of the crew.
Yep.
Using the city of Atlanta was a great character choice, because like it's not usually one of the, you know, the big cities. It's not Los Angeles, it's not New York, it's not Chicago. But I mean, Atlanta, everything's getting done in Atlanta right now, film-wise, and it has been for a while. And I think that using the city of Atlanta was a great choice, and it's a city that, you know, people haven't grown tired of, right? Because you can be like, oh, New York, of course, there's crime in the streets. But Atlanta, it's like, okay, cool. Like, this is a different take on the traditional, like, way you see Atlanta. It's either very like Olympics, or it's very like urban influenced, and this wasn't at all.
Edgar Wright, actually, I think they did a lot of direction of the movie based on the fact that they were in Atlanta. I don't know if they initially intended it to be in Atlanta or somewhere else, but I know that the movie just feels like Atlanta.
It does.
Like, obviously, the whole thing is like taking place downtown. There's the car chases and stuff like that, but even the clothes that they wear, like Jamie Foxx's character has an Atlanta feel. Like, they tried to bring in the influence of Atlanta in the wardrobe. In obviously they highlight the city as they're doing car chases all around the city, but they also incorporate like the music into it as well. They're like, we want music that feels like music that you would listen to in Atlanta, or that Atlanta would be proud to be like, yes, this is music that's associated with our city.
Yeah, and Atlanta is a huge, huge music city, which I'm very proud to be formerly a part of, near the area almost.
Loosely connected.
I worked in the outskirts of Atlanta when we lived in Athens, which was fun. Yeah, so when you first meet the characters, it's such an array of different people, all holding their own weight, right? No one is like outshadowed by anyone. And I love it that Kevin Spacey's character Doc even says he never works with the same crew twice, but he always has Baby as the driver.
Yep. This is a good luck charm.
Absolutely. And you see later that when Baby doesn't want to do it, it gets a little rough for Doc, right? Any scenes or anything that kind of like were use the music in the best way, if you can even pick out one of those?
I mean, I think all of the chase scenes, the fight scenes, the, like you said, the gunshots, timing with the beat. I do like the scene where they have the shootout with the bad cops.
Mm-hmm.
that takes place, like all of those shots, like they have very heavy duty guns, so it's a very fast paced song that they're timing with the beat. All of those are impressive. If I go beyond that, there's other scenes where I think of the laundromat scene,
right?
I think it's just beautiful cinematography. They have the primary colors,
the use of color in the
background. You've got a washer that's blue, the next one's yellow, the next one's red, and then it restarts at blue. And all of those are going at the same time. It's such a cool shot. I don't think that there's a reason behind it besides just looking gorgeous.
It does look really pretty. It took me back to another one of Edgar Wright's films, which is Scott Pilgrim. Very comic book heavy, very, very good use of colors. It was one of the lightest scenes of the film because it was like the initial, we're kind of falling in love scene. And I think that it worked very well. Yeah, I'm not sure the reasoning behind the use of those colors, but I love it. I thought it was a great choice aesthetically as well.
Yeah, what about you? Do you have another scene that you think of that has really captured you, brought you into the movie?
It's hard to pick one because of the whole thing. Not brought me in, but kept me in, gave me hope, maybe, is when he figures out, like, Kevin Spacey's character Doc is like, hey, you're not done, right? Now you just have the choice to say no. And he has to go to the post office, and he goes to the post office with Doc's nephew. He's kind of like nervous and fidgeting and looking around a little bit, like counting. And you can see him like mouthing how many cameras there are and how many security guards there are and stuff like that. And the little kid just playing his PSP is just like, he's just like 10 security cameras, 2 security guards, non-armed, and like giving all this information. And I'm just like, that's just so brilliantly done, right? Because like here he is freaking out, and it gives you like the juxtaposition of how, you know, sometimes if you're nervous about something or if you're invested too much in something, that you're going to overcompensate and probably miss a lot of little details. And the kid's like, I don't care about things. My uncle's rich and I'm going to be in the crime industry probably now or one day. Doc's character says that Baby started boosting cars when he could just see over the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe, are we going to get a sequel? Are we going to get a Baby Driver Jr.?
I know that they are making a Baby Driver 2, and we can talk more about that by the end of it. That is in the process. They have something written for it. I know Ansel Elgort also had some stuff come out in the past year or so. So who knows where this is going to go with the fact that two of their star people in it may or may not be in it.
I didn't hear about Ansel's, but I'll have to look into that.
The thing that makes me laugh the most is the fact that Doc's good luck charm is this guy who doesn't want to be in the crime business. He just loves driving cars. Like, that's all it is. He's like, it takes me out of my tinnitus. I just listen to music and drive cars, and I'm good.
I do love when everything starts hitting the fan, how like he when he takes the old lady's car and like he does like she's like, oh my god, no, my purse, and he does like this donut just like flat. And for those of you listening, I'm literally spiraling my hands right now so you can see how the car goes. And he like throws the purse, but he won't leave until he finds the right song on the radio. Cops are on foot, in cars, everything, and he's just in this like huge oversized Cadillac trying to like find a song to speed away to. And I think that's fantastic. It shows that he's more than just tinnitus, right? It shows that he's really kind of raised and built on this music because of when you get his backstory, his mom, and all that kind of stuff. Maybe we'll get a prequel. Maybe it's a prequel to Baby Driver. Those little instances are fantastic. That, and then like the Halloween masks, which I thought was the Mike Myers. It says Mike Myers, and it's freaking Austin Powers. I thought that was fantastic.
They actually, I was reading somewhere that they actually wanted to get the Halloween masks. Like, they wanted to get the scary Michael Myers masks, but then couldn't get the licensing for it to put it in the movie. And so Edgar Wright called Mike Myers, like the actor Mike Myers, and said, hey, do you mind if we use your likeness in this movie? Mike Myers thought it was hilarious. I was like, absolutely, go for it. And so that's why they ended up doing that scene where he was confused on which Michael Myers mask to get. So he ended up getting the actual actor, Mike Myers' face on his masks.
I think that's great. I think it worked even better. Because like, and I even like how it masks the, pun intended, the joke until they put it on. Because like, he's even got, like, I was looking at the guy putting on the mask. He's even got like blue on, like a blue like Carhartt shirt on, which is like, of course, how Mike Myers looks in the Halloween movies. And I thought that like they literally hold it until the last second, and it works so well.
Yeah, talking about that character, they play the character who was supposed to get the Michael Myers Halloween masks as a stupid character, which arguably he plays that role pretty well. One of the details that I really enjoyed from the movie, he's the one who forgets his shotgun. So they end up getting into this like heated car chase and they have to switch cars in traffic. He's the one who's just like, oh no, guys, I forgot my shotgun. Well, when he goes out to do the heist, he's the only person who doesn't have a shotgun strap, like a guitar strap or whatever that would be like strapped and actually attached to you.
He's just like running down the highway, just like
strapless. And so the fact that he left his shotgun makes sense because he's probably the one who didn't have it strapped to him when he was trying to get away. So there's just little details like that Edgar Wright puts into his movies and really make sure that everything is accounted for. And if I sort of move into that direction, like the first initial chase, there was Baby drifts through a red light and you can actually see a flash of a red light camera take his picture. So later when they show a picture of Baby on the news, it's blurry and black and white, but that is where that picture would come from. So it's things like that that probably don't even, people wouldn't catch or care about. They're like, oh, they had a picture of Baby. It's like he wants to make sure, like, no, we know when that picture was taken. We know, like, we put the whole story together from start to finish.
And then that feeds in directly, the camera taking the picture feeds in directly to, like, his, the gentleman he's taking care of is, like, upset at him for living this life of crime and all that kind of stuff because he sees it on the news. And, yeah, it just, because, like, the news could have easily said, hey, there was this violent car chase, whatever, whatever. And he would have been like, oh, happens every day, it's Atlanta. But then with the picture taken, and then you as an audience knowing or not knowing that the picture was taken, it's just, yeah, absolutely. It's just that subtle little, like, okay, here it is. And it's even, like, it's forgettable, right? It's like, oh, he's, okay, well, that's how traffic lights work. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how they go. Yeah, I thought the stunts, whoever they let loose on the streets of Atlanta with these cars just did so good. It was, God, like when, it's in the first car chase, like that hooks you. Like that's what's, it's like, oh my God, this is fantastic. He hits, like the police throw out the spike strip. He hits the spike strip, makes it go the other direction and gets the police car's tires popped. And it's so like, I don't know a lot about cars. I don't know about car racing or drifting or driving that well for that matter, but that is extremely impressive. And I want to know how long this movie took to shoot in general. Most movies take about 4 months roughly. I want to know how long this took to shoot.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm so glad you brought up the cars because I have so much in my notes on what I loved about the cars. Like, they use real car physics. Like, this isn't Fast and the Furious. We're just going to get these just CGI car action going on. It's actually real car physics. They're doing a lot of the things in cars, like, in the shots. Like, they're not going in and editing things in post. It has, like, a very honest Fast and Furious feel to it during those car scenes. And I was actually looking, they have the same stunt driver as John Wick. And John Wick also has a lot of praise for how they're doing like real car physics. They're not going to try to put in a fake thing. And so it's really revolutionizing the industry of like, you don't need to make these huge blockbusters. You can make a real and honest film about heist movies, put in real car chases, as long as you're doing it the right way. So kudos to Jeremy Fry. That was the stunt driver that worked on both John Wick and Baby Driver. But it really is some of the shots, like even teaching Ansel Elgort how to drive some of these shots, because right. He has to be in the movie. They can't just have a stunt driver for everything. So some of the drifts they taught him to do that standing donut. And the shots, like the one that stands out the most to me is like him and Lily James drifting through the parking deck and basically drifting to where the camera is just in the front window. And to be that cameraman holding a camera while a car is drifting sideways towards you and stopping on a dime right where you can focus on Lily James' face, that shot is incredible.
Going back to what you said, it's not like Fast and the Furious. It's not like, you know, they put what was the first car they drive? The little Subaru. They don't put that on a plane or they don't like attach it to a rocket. It's just like real cars that can easily be stolen in the city of Atlanta. And like when they get rid of the Subaru in the beginning, they drive away in like a green Toyota Camry. Like nothing special. It's nothing. Yeah. I think the most like car, if you will, like car is, it's probably like a Challenger that they get because he's driving trucks. He drives yeah. a Chevy Avalanche at one point. He does drive a Mercedes, but that's Doc's. Like His car is like an older, really nice, but older, like probably Buick. So it's not like, you know, a gorgeous, like.
Yeah, it's not going to be one of those like big car name movies, as you would imagine most car chase movies to be like, hey, we're going to throw out these super flashy cars. Yeah. Like, it's not going to do that. Again, like you said, it's a Subaru for the first car. So no knock to Subaru, but it's not going to be your like old 1970 exactly. Mustang. Like,
it's not a lot of muscle. It's movie. Great. They're great performance, not a lot of muscle. Right. Yeah. Okay. I think we've talked enough yet. Not a lot at all. Like, I feel like we've gotten a lot done, but we still easily could go on about this movie for forever and ever and ever, but they're giving us the red light here in production, here in the studio. So let's rate this. Let's rate this movie. You want to go first? You have diligent notes on this. I'll let you go first.
I can. I do. I took pages and pages of notes for this movie because there's so much going on. I think Edgar Wright is a phenomenal director. If you haven't seen any of his other movies and you've only watched Baby Driver so far, go back and watch his other movies. I mean, he's got the like Shaun of the Dead trilogy. He's got, as we said, Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe. The world, is that what it is? The World.
I just call it Scott Pilgrim.
Whatever his older movies are. That's what I do too. But no, this movie, it hits everything as perfectly as I think you can hit it. It does have the trope of it's just a one last heist movie. It kind of plays into that boring genre of action car chase movies, but it does it in such a unique and special way. I'm going to go for another 10 out of 10.
Oof.
This isn't normal. It's not normal for me to give 10 out of 10 movies. We've just gotten so lucky to have watched great ones in our first couple episodes.
I almost agree. I really do. It does take this kind of not boring genre, but like overplayed genre. It's a very simple concept, and I think that's what makes it even better. It's a very simple concept, and they take it and they do things that haven't been done with it before, right? I mean, the closest thing Fast and the Furious did was have Ludacris in it. Like, that's what they did, right? Which is great. I love Ludacris. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. There were one or two choices I remember that I was like, maybe not that I would have made. But I can't even really remember, but I know they're in my mind. So that's why it's a high 9. It's like a 9.4. So you can almost round it up.
We're back to
that. Yeah, you can almost round it up to a 10, but it's going to say 9.4 just because it had everything. It's something for everybody, right?
We joked about it before we started talking, but comparing movies to wines, I compare this movie to like a red Zinfandel. It's super spicy. It's exciting. Like, it's often super highly alcoholic, so it's super intoxicating. Like, it's that type of movie. It's a hit you in the face. Go from the first minute. It is. If you love that type of movie, if you love Fast and Furious, but you want a more realistic, definitely watch this movie and keep it saved on your replay list.
And because I'm not a real life sommelier, I'm a cinema sommelier. I'm going to say it's a box wine. And I'll say that because it is simple, but effective. And that's all there is. And it seems like box wine may be that as well. Let's spin that wheel.
Spin that wheel.
And it looks like the next movie is the Wachowskis 2012 Cloud Atlas. It is described as an action drama mystery starring God himself, Tom Hanks, and Halle Berry. I'm excited. I've never seen this movie.
Same here.
This should be an interesting time then. So I guess grab your compasses
and your raindrops.
and meet us in the clouds.
Meet us there. I guess. Second star to the right. So for Garanormal Activity. So for Cinema Sommelier, I am Gary T. Moore.
I'm Zachary Wacholeski. Thank you for listening.